Welcome to Beyond the Shelf. I'm Scott Curry with Chef's Best. We gather to talk about the trends in marketing, retail, and production in food and beverage that are shaping the industry. We are joined today by entrepreneur Ben Moore. Ben is the founder of The Ugly Company, a fascinating company that prevents food waste by upcycling ugly fruit and transforming it into healthy dried fruit snacks. He's a fourth-generation farmer from California's Central Valley. He graduated from Azusa Pacific University and holds an MBA from Notre Dame's Mendoza College of Business. And I'd like to thank Ben as well for his 3 years of service as an infantry officer in the U.S. Army as well. So, Ben, thanks for being here and welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Scott. I really appreciate you having me on. I'm excited to share my thoughts on The Ugly Company and the industry in general. So thanks, Scott.
Awesome. It's our pleasure. So tell us a little bit about your background. You grew up on a farm. You're in Kingsbury, California. So just for folks down in Central Valley, California, you know, the supplier to the world, really, of so much food. And we'll get into what that looks like. You're kind of outside Fresno, if you will, for people that aren't too familiar with California's geography. But tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to start The Ugly Company.
Yeah, so born and raised here in Kingsburg, California. And Kingsburg is a really neat, unique town in Central California. It used to be an old Wild West cowboy town, and then Swedish immigrants took it over and kind of straightened it out. And that's where, when my grandma stepped in, met up with my grandpa, and they were farming here, mostly raisin grapes and wine grapes. And so I worked on the family farm as a kid. We grew everything from plums to peaches, alfalfa, you name it. There was always something different we had going on. When I graduated high school, I went on to Azusa Pacific. I wanted to play football, eventually changed my mind and went into the Army, and served there for a while. Loved my time in the service. It really had a great impact on who I am. Eventually left and came back home to the family farm. And there just really wasn't enough work, enough career opportunity to go around for me to, to really make a living full-time farming with my family. So I did what most anybody getting out of the Army with a bachelor's degree would do. I went and drove truck. I wanted to learn to drive truck because that's an important skill that farmers have. And I felt like grinding the gears on somebody else's truck was going to be a better thing to do than on my dad's. And during that time, my dad's farming operation had evolved quite a bit to where he was hauling quite a bit of commodities, and he was hauling compost and manure. And in the off season, in the summer, he would take ugly fruit from farms around here, and he would take them to dairies, and he would trade them for manure in the winter. So you can kind of fast forward, 10 years down the road, I'm out of the Army. I'm driving truck. I've bought my own truck at this point, and I'm, hauling the equipment and whatever. And my dad needs some help with his trucking side of the operation. And all these little dairies he used to haul this ugly fruit to for cow feed, most all of them had closed up. They'd shut down. They weren't big enough to keep it going. And so he has resorted to essentially just dumping out all this great edible fruit at his farm in one of his open fields that's not planted. And he makes some compost out of it, but for the most part, you're just dumping about 6 or 8 million pounds of fruit out a year, and it's just sitting there rotting. And me with my truck, I'd go help him, when he needed some help. And every time I'd hook up to one of those loads of fruit, you sit there and think, like, God, this is good fruit. There's got to be something to do with it. I mean, everybody, when we were farming stone fruit, everybody always thought, like, there's got to be something to do with all this ugly fruit, these coals that were thrown away. And so finally, I really just put myself to the task. I sold my trucks, my bulldozers. I quit leasing the raisin vineyards I was leasing. And that's when I went on to the University of Notre Dame and spent that time really launching The Ugly Company in conjunction with learning some of the finer points of business.
Wonderful background story. Thank you. I'd love a time machine to go meet your grandparents. That, back then, Wild West town, and moving to the Central Valley of California, can only imagine what that life was like for them. And the resilience that they must have had. Can you define what ugly fruit is? And I think I don't know if ugly is an actual industry term or you know what you've just kind of started referring to it as with the company being the ugly company, but sticking with that word ugly, can you just define for us what it is? We're obviously all very accustomed to perfectly symmetrical apples or whatnot, but what qualifies as ugly? And I think that it would be fair to also qualify when is something go from ugly to actually not edible, you know, rotten or whatnot. How would you describe it as a farmer and in a way that a consumer could understand, given the, I guess you'd call it training that we have had to look for perfect looking fruit? So define what an ugly fruit is.
Yeah. So the bare bones essential definition, description I use of ugly fruit is ugly fruit is a piece of fruit that is not marketable for any host of reasons and gets dumped out and gets wasted. So that basically covers every piece of fruit that's not marketable. The actual industry term that we use as farmers is cull, C-U-L-L, and that is the process of culling fruit from your, you know, your grade ones and your grade twos, and you're culling it because you cannot sell it. And so the reasons this fruit is culled or it becomes ugly fruit can be anything from size and shape, color. It's too big, it's too small, it's too round, it's not round enough. There's blemishes on it. There's some scarring, some wind scars from the fruit was banging around on the tree. It's a little bit too ripe. There's all these host of reasons that make that piece of fruit unmarketable. And sometimes it's even a perfect piece of fruit. The market just isn't there for it. So it's not worth packing into a box and shipping somewhere across the country. So that is what an ugly piece of fruit is by my definition. Any piece of fruit that is not marketable for one reason or another. And if you'd like, I could give you some examples that could help illustrate some of that. I can definitely go more in depth if you'd like.
Yeah, well, I definitely invite people to visit your website where there are photos of ugly fruit. Gosh, I hate using the term ugly. If you go to theugly.company, you can check that out. But it's I want to talk about your company a little bit, but I think that, you do have a broader mission here, which is to educate folks on this. So let's talk about that a little bit. I would really imagine that your grandparents, for example, wouldn't have tossed away a tangerine or what have you that had a wind scar on it, right? I mean, we're just talking about, this is nature, right? This is, as you said, this is a marketable problem. This is not a nature problem. We should not have an expectation that nature is making a perfectly shiny, perfectly red apple every single time. You've tossed out a few numbers. They're startling. I mean, we're not talking about a fruit here, a fruit there. We're talking about, was it millions of pounds? I mean, you've talked about hundreds of thousands of tons over time. What percent, if I'm a farmer, right, and I've presumably done everything right in terms of watering and everything like that, what percent of my crop usually ends up in that category of ugly? Is this, 90% is ugly, so we're only sending 10% to the supermarket, or is it, is it the reverse of that? Just help me understand a little bit about, I almost said how common this problem is, but it's not a problem. It's just, this is nature. But right. What's reality about the approximate percent? Yeah, it's just reality.
So those percents, I mean, it really, really depends on the given year, the variety of fruit it is, there's so many factors that go into the variability of what is ends up being a grade one versus a grade two versus a cull, et cetera. But it's a very kind of a general way to look at it. If you have a yellow peach orchard, generally you're going to have about 70% of your fruit is a grade one or a grade two. So, you know, very marketable, generally a very marketable piece of fruit. You might have kind of some grade three utility pack somewhere in there that might account for another 5 or 10% of it, depending on how the market is. But anywhere, usually about 20 to 30% of your fruit is considered ugly for one reason or another. And now of that 20 to 30%, there are some avenues currently for value-added products and donations and a few other ways that you can find a good use for your fruit. But generally, anywhere from, you know, really 10 to 30% of the fruit that's grown in a yellow peach orchard is going to get cold, and it's going to get dumped out for one reason or another.
Tell us what, you know, you grew up on a family farm. I believe that you are also owner and founder of what you call Big Bend Farm. Can you help people understand the importance of the Central Valley to feeding the country and world, and what that means for family farmers, but also what it means for family farmers when, as you're suggesting, somewhere around 30%, and I know you just gave peaches as an example there, but point being, this isn't a 1% issue. It's a sizable part of their harvest. What's it like in 2021 for a family farmer? What does it mean that, you know, a sizable percentage of their well-grown fruit isn't marketable? So I would assume that through the value and supply chain there, that less money trickles down to them. As you know, considering most of our, you know, people in this country, we're in the suburbs looking for perfect apples in our nice supermarket every week. Can you help me understand a little bit about what it's like to be a family farmer? And you know, you just hear so much in the news, so I don't want to really try and pry that apart. I'd rather hear from you what it's like for a family farmer and what challenges there are, if any, associated with needing to discard, say, millions of pounds of fruit, tens or hundreds of thousands of tons across, I'm sure, all of California, and what that means for a family farmer.
Yes, I mean, as far as, you know, I'll kind of break this question apart into two different categories of what, you know, my experience of being a family farmer is like, and also some of the economic benefits or losses from not being able to sell your whole crop. So being a family farmer, from my experience, is extremely tough. It's such a great thing to be a part of, but it's also, you know, it's just tough because you're competing against a lot of forces that you can't control. You love your job, you love your family legacy, but at my age, you're not gonna make a living doing it. You know, so just about everybody that's my age is no longer farming on a family basis. If you're farming, it's kind of just because it's a hobby and you like doing it. So that's sort of the reality of family farming. As far as the economic implications of not being able to sell your whole crop, it's very significant. If you look at anything that you manufacture, anything that you create, if you can achieve some high level of efficiency with your growing process or your manufacturing process, you're going to be more profitable. And you have to be profitable to stay in business. So that's just the reality of it. And right now, just, you know, the basic economics of having ugly fruit, you know, there's one farm that my dad hauls for, and I think he charges them, they spend anywhere from $50,000 to $60,000 a year for him to haul off their ugly fruit, which is, you know, it's pretty significant when you're basically just paying trucks to go dump out fruit that could otherwise be sold in some form or another. But then you look at the, you know, that 6 or 8 million pounds of fruit that's being dumped out from that one farm. Well, not only is it worth -$10 a ton for them right now, if they could get any return like what we do with our product, or we're depending on the kind of fruit we're taking, we're paying anywhere from $70 a ton to you know, $250-$300 a ton. That's very, very significant to that family farm, and it certainly helps them, you know, reinvest in their business, continue to be sustainable and grow. So yeah, having a strong value-added product that's created from your ugly fruit is a very, very significant thing for the industry and for family farms in Central California.
I think it's just worth pointing out how I think fortunate we are, and we need to be reminded that where our food begins. And it begins, as you said, you know, a lot of these families. I mean, to think of it, on the one hand, it's a miracle, right? I mean, I can walk a half mile down the street right now and buy an apple for what, like 40 cents. That was grown by someone, you know, cared for, picked, shipped, all the way along through the supply chain, everyone making some money along the way to bring a 50-cent apple into my home for my kids is on its face a remarkable achievement. But I just want to point out that with it, we need to, you know, have care and thought and understanding and support, you know, for our family farmers as well. Whenever you're that fortunate as we are as a society, we need to, you know, remember where things began and where the entire supply chain is. And which brings us to the ugly company, and one that everyone should be taking a look at. So tell us how the ugly company started. I know that there was a little bit of an aha moment there for you. I was reading your bio online of, I think it was the Puerto Rico and Houston hurricanes, where there was, you know, people were starving. You know, I mean, we could not get food to them. Tell me about that aha moment that you had that I think it at least in part helped you, motivated you to start the ugly company.
Yeah. So as far as that kind of light bulb moment you're talking about, for me, it happened in the summer of 2017. There had been a hurricane in Houston, which it was very devastating, but the FEMA response, everything seemed to be, based on the news I was reading, seemed to be very, very well taken care of. You know, everybody was, yeah, a lot of property damage, but things were fine. Then it was 10 days later or 2 weeks later, there was a hurricane in Puerto Rico. And you start hearing the news reports that, hey, people don't have enough water, they don't have enough food. FEMA's completely out of supplies because they just got hit with a double whammy of a hurricane. And then you're just kind of like, wow, that's devastating to hear. You start seeing that there's companies that are kind of sham companies getting these contracts to fulfill emergency food that aren't even real companies, and they're dropping the ball on it and getting exposed, et cetera. And just, you know, as those news reports are coming in, I think that day alone, I think I hauled 3 or 4 loads of fruit for my dad and dumped them out in his field. And it's just like, oh, I mean, what a shame that we have an excess here. And there's people, you know, halfway across the country, halfway across the world that don't have enough food. And I felt like, you know, that I got to put my mind to the task and do something about this, because everybody growing up around here that works in ag or farms has always been like, oh, you know, there's the coal truck, more fruit getting dumped out. I mean, it just kind of is what it is. There's nothing anybody can do about it. It's just how it is, right? And I felt like, you know, I really wanted to tackle this issue and, you know, have that sense of fulfillment for myself, but also to help out the other farmers around Kingsburg. Mm-hmm.
So you have the ugly company, and you know, you refer to it as upcycled dry fruit. You've got a great product line. You have nectarines. Is it apricots or apricots? I'd rather hear, I hear it so many different ways.
Depends on where you're from, I guess. But I've always said apricots. In the Midwest, people criticize me on that. So just.
So, all right. Peaches, you have kiwis as well. Describe the product a little bit. Is your dried fruit ugly as well? Would people be able to tell that there's appearance difference? And how do you overcome that challenge, you know, from a marketing standpoint, to untrain them about, about the visible appearance?
Yeah. So if you were to look at our bag, there's two things that are really going to stand out to you on the front. And the first thing is it says, "Hello, I'm ugly," which is in itself kind of challenging, right? Like, what? what is that? You know? And then the second thing you're going to see is it says 100% upcycled, peaches or kiwis or whatever's actually in the bag. And to me, I was very, very intentional with that, that I wanted to communicate, you know, two things. Number one, there's this expectation that's ugly. And then number two, that the product is upcycled. And when I originally put that on the bag, what, 3 years ago now, upcycled wasn't even really a word. It was kind of in circulation, but it wasn't really a generally accepted term for describing produce that, you know, is made into a healthy product that otherwise would have become waste. And so I definitely got some kind of criticism for that. Originally, people were like, "What? We don't even know what that means. How can you possibly put that on your bag?" And I said, "No, I want to communicate the most important thing about this product, and that's it, that it's ugly and it's upcycled." And if you flip it around on the back, there's, you know, a little story about how many actual peaches go into the bag, how many pounds of waste is being diverted by buying this bag rather than, you know, one of the farms having to dump it out. But the other really unique thing that I like to hang my hat on is the only thing that's in that bag is the fruit itself. There's no preservatives, there's no added ingredients, there's no sugar, you know, to make it heavier and cheaper to sell, or, you know, cheaper to create and easier to sell. So from a product standpoint, it's actually very, very unique in the sense that there is not, it's hard to find dried fruit that does not have any added ingredients. And most of those preservatives are added in there to maintain the color and the shape and to make it a prettier piece of fruit. But there's, you know, I looked at it like, well, you know, the expectation is already that it's ugly. So what, why would I want to add some extra ingredient there just to make it look better? That's not even really good for you. So.
Yeah. And you have two, you know, you have a direct to consumer model going right now. You can purchase online. There's also a nice favorable subscription model as well. But you are in retail. So let's talk about that a little bit. On your map on your website, it appears that you're in a number of Whole Foods. I'm not sure if there's elsewhere, but my bigger point here is how have the conversations gone with retailers? Are they embracing it? I think, you know, with your Whole Food shopper, it perhaps might have been an easier sell-in because it is a more socially conscious consumer in general at Whole Foods, but assuming that you've talked to some other retailers, how have those conversations gone? And, you know, do they say, gosh, you know, I don't know, this is, you know, they've built their brands on having perfect produce. They've, you know, everything being perfect. You know, they may question, well, does it really taste good? They're not trained to think this way, right? If we're just a little bit honest here, they're trained to find and sell what you call marketable, visually marketable product that have met the aesthetic standard that we have, I think at this point in this conversation, I'd say unfortunately set. How have those conversations gone? Have there been challenges around it?
Yeah, so it's kind of a two-part, it's almost a two-part answer there. And the first part being, initially it was very difficult because nobody knew what upcycled anything meant. So very early on, you know, in the first summer that we had our product and we're trying to sell it, a lot of people didn't get it. But flash forward to this year, and, you know, upcycling is a trend. We're a trending brand with Whole Foods, and we ourselves as a company have really learned to communicate the value of what we're doing. Not only, you know, the great product, the value to the farmers, the value to the consumers, but also the actual value to those retail channels, because just about every you know, significant retail channel now has some sort of sustainability goals. They have goals to reduce food waste. They have goals to reduce their environmental impact, et cetera. And when I stand there and or one of our salespeople stands there and says, hey, this is our product. Here's how, you know, not only is it a great product, but it helps you meet all these goals. What we're doing lines up perfectly with what you want to get done. And honestly, it's been so well received conceptually that it's really exciting for us. Though the next challenge is to convert on that excitement and get it onto more shelves, which we're working at every single day. But it's one thing to have a lot of excitement behind the product and then say, hey, we have these sustainability goals, and it's the next thing to actually take action on it. And that's where it's a little bit tough for us right now. You know, we're a really small company. I was just reading, you know, in the news this morning, there's some other companies that have raised you know, $5-10 million for their brands, and I'm sitting over here, I'm still driving truck half the time, right? So, so that's definitely a challenge for us, because we have to, you know, we have to have the war chest, we have to have the ammunition to, you know, to get into some of these larger channels. And as a small brand, it's very difficult. It's very, very difficult, regardless of what type of product you have. It's very difficult to get shelf space, regardless of the excitement behind the industry. And that's something that I'm, you know, I'm kind of myself having a reckoning with of, you know, to save more fruit, I have to grow this company. And to grow this company, I have to, you know, make some decisions that are potentially going to, you know, have to raise some investment money from certain people. And, you know, I really don't want to dilute the family essence that our company has, but, you know, we're competing against a lot of factors, and, you know, it's definitely difficult.
Yeah, definitely. You mentioned earlier grinding away on the government truck gears, and you're grinding right now. You know, you're experiencing success as a company. You know, I'll point out as well, you know, you do have national distribution. Like I said, you've got some penetration to go, but just in California alone, you have, you know, a lot of Whole Foods, Gelson's, Bristol Farms in other markets. And if folks take a look at your website, it's fair to say majority of the metro areas, you can find the Ugly Company products, you know, within your metro area. And like I said, you can also order online as well directly. And to look, get great tasting, nutritious food, you know, you're supporting small farmers, and this is a true way to bring, you know, social capitalism directly to, you know, the farmers themselves and support them. And I think it's fair to say none of these farmers want to throw away any of this food. The establishment of this perfection and this aesthetic is not something that they ever asked for, and that they're very willing to sell this fruit so that people can not only enjoy it, but that it can feed people and provide them, you know, the nutritional value that fruit does, and whether dried or otherwise as well. So you shared a little bit about, you know, what's next for you. I like to always take a look back with any entrepreneur, successful ones as you as well, and ask the question, what if you had that time machine, right? You could go back and talk to Ben 3, 4, 5 years ago as you're starting the company and you're growing. What lessons have you learned along the way that you would tell Ben, or that you would share with any potential or current entrepreneur out there that, gosh, I wish I had done this or learned about that a little bit earlier in this journey?
Yeah, so my number one, I guess, piece of advice and lesson learned I'd like to share with everybody that has any goals in life, whether it's through business or anything else, is just to don't quit. The only thing that kills an idea, that kills a goal, is when you quit on it. And despite how hard things can be, as long as you don't quit, there is always another side to it, and it will get better. So that's definitely the piece of advice I would like to share with everyone. And the other piece of advice, and this is something I've kind of struggled with my whole life, is that, you know, when you're an ambitious person, when you have big ideas, it's very easy to think, oh, this is so miserable now. I want to get to the next phase. I can't wait until we do this, until I can finally afford this new truck, this new trailer. You know, I can make this part of our operation easier. And you forget to really appreciate where you currently are. And then someday, you know, you're gonna look back and like, man, I wish I would have enjoyed that a little bit more. Right. You know, I think Jerry Rice was one of the most famous people. Like, I just worked so hard my whole career, I never even enjoyed it. I was the best there ever was, best there ever will be, but I didn't really exactly have fun doing it. Right. And so I often have to remind myself, especially, you know, this summer for us, is I would say kind of a make or break summer. You know, we're scaling up. We still have a lot of inefficiencies in our production. We have challenges in every corner you can imagine. But if we can pull through it, I think we're really going to be in a good spot. And yeah, like I said, I mean, the number one thing is just don't quit and enjoy the process as best you can, because it makes the tough situation a lot easier if you're not beating yourself up too hard over it.
Well, my hope would be that this podcast can serve as kind of a chronicle for you to look back on as your success continues. And, you know, in a couple of years, you can go listen to it and maybe it'll remind you of some of the enjoyment that you've had along the way. Well, let's talk one more time about where folks can find you. Go ahead and list off some of the retailers. You have theugly.company.com where people can find you. And then, you know, you're very active on social media. You have great content, some of which I would say kind of falls in that category of education, or at least telling the story of the fruit itself. You're available on Instagram at Pack of Ugly, and it can be found on Facebook as well. But talk about the retail distribution a little bit so folks can look for you.
Yeah, so as far as the easiest way to find our product is you can go on our website. We have that little map on the bottom of the homepage that you can scroll out and see, hey, what's the closest store I can buy it, the product at. If it's nowhere close, you can do one of two things. You can order from the website. We have free shipping beyond a certain price range. I think it's $14.97. But what's also great is if you have a hometown store or somewhere you like to shop, go ahead and do us a favor and tell that store manager, hey, get this product on the shelf. I'd love to try it. And we'll help get it in that store. The other thing you mentioned, I would like to say, you talked about our education and some of the stuff we're doing on Instagram about farming and food waste. We actually have a new video series we're producing called Heart of the Valley. And we're really digging into the educational component of our supply chain, the farmers that we work with, what makes a piece of fruit ugly. And that's something I'm really proud of. I'm really excited that we're going to be able to share, because to me, that's the most unique part about our company, is that, you know, I am a farmer. Everybody that works for the Ugly Company lives right here in Kingsburg, California. And we are very, very intimately connected to this issue of food waste. And it's been my experiences that the best solutions to the greatest problems come from right where ground zero is, right where the problem started. So, mm-hmm. And this series will really, really highlight how closely connected to food waste that we really are at the Ugly Company.
Yeah, people should check them out. They're these great little short videos, you know, easily to digest, if you will, really well produced as well. So I encourage people to check them out. Well, Ben, it's, you know, I can't help but sit here and have some guilt, to be honest. It's just mind-boggling how much food we throw away in this country. I would hope that that we could normalize someday, you know, food that is not aesthetically perfect as being sold and something that you could bring home. I would have to suggest that, I don't know, in this present moment, I would be pessimistic on that. I think that that's a big boat to turn around, even if it should be turned around. I think that, you know, our notions of perfection and consumer culture are against. That being said, I'm not sure if I could wish and hope for a company to be successful more than yours here. There's absolutely no reason that, you know, should be supporting this company. It supports farmers directly. These farmers are absolutely critical to our economy, to raising our own families. And this is a perfect, great way to support them and to stress again, this is good food. And it's just flat out the right thing to do. So I'd encourage people to check them out, give them a try. And again, you're doing so knowing that you're supporting farmers, and until, I don't know, maybe our society wakes up a little bit and realizes that we can feed a lot more people. We can feed ourselves and each other if we just normalize really good, high quality fruit that, I mean, what are we talking here? Windscar, like you said, it's almost embarrassing to even think about, but it's where we are. And it's great that we have entrepreneurs like you out there that, like you said, you recognize the, you know, the source and the root, in the process. And I'm sure that you're working with a lot of other folks and partners and stuff that are doing this type of upcycling. And it's one that we should be supporting, and we're all better off for it. So if there's anything else you'd like to add, I'll give you an opportunity to do that. But I want to also thank you for being on the podcast, and hopefully we can help spread your story and you know, wish you luck in pushing into more retail. And like I said, supporting Central Valley of California in particular, that's so critical to, you know, keeping us and the entire world fed.
Yeah. Yeah, Scott, no, I really do appreciate you bringing me on as well. Anytime I get the opportunity to tell somebody about what we're doing and the goals that we have, I take it, and I really appreciate you having this platform. As far as what you said though about you feeling some personal level of guilt, you know, I like to tell people that there's really nobody specifically to blame for having, you know, a food waste issue like this. You know, it's not the farmer's fault, it's not the consumer's fault, it's not the retailer's fault. Sort of just the reality of the situation. So rather than spending any time worrying about, you know, guilt or who's to blame, I like to focus on the positive aspects of it. And that's the fact that great things can be solved by great people. And it just takes everybody kind of chipping in and working together on it. And problems can definitely be solved and overcome. And I know that at The Ugly Company can be part of that solution. So any support people have for us, the best thing you can do is just try our product and tell your neighbor. So I appreciate that. And thank you everybody for listening.
Thank you. Very well said. So check them out. The Ugly Company. You can Google it. The Ugly Company or the first one that'll come out, or go directly to theugly.company. And as I said, great subscription product as well. So you can get this nothing added, non-GMO, all natural, wonderful tasting fruit directly to your door. You know, supply your family with a lot of high nutritional value. So check them out, The Ugly Company. Ben, again, thank you very much for coming on. Consider me a fan. Wishing you the best of luck. And said, keep grinding. You've got incredible work ethic. That's obvious to anyone that's listening right now. So appreciate you coming on, sharing your story. Thanks, Ben.
Thanks, Scott.
Thanks for listening to Beyond the Shelf, presented by Chef's Best. If you enjoyed today's episode, please don't forget to rate us and leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your episodes. For more details about all of our episodes from inside the ever-changing food and beverage industry, visit chefsbest.com.